This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Family Health Channel. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience at eHealth Radio. Did you know you're not finished yet? Because you came from an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. Today we are with Dr. Karen Herrick, who has shared clinical expertise for 24 years in her private practice and by lecturing throughout the United States on dysfunctional and addictive homes. Karen, a pleasure to have you a part of eHealth Radio.
Thank you for asking me.
Hey, you're welcome. So tell us, what is an alcoholic or dysfunctional family?
Well, an alcoholic home is one where someone is having negative problems in their life due to drinking alcohol, which affects the whole family. And a dysfunctional home is one where your emotional needs are not being met because of some type of addiction or dysfunction that's going on with your parents. And that also happens in an alcoholic home. I mean, mostly the male is the alcoholic, so if mom is spending all her time trying to get dad to work or trying to get dad to behave or show up at different places, then she's really not paying that much attention to the children. So then your emotional needs as a child do not get met.
I can certainly see that very clearly. Now, what are the roles and characteristics that children usually take on in these families?
Well, the first, they generally go this way. They don't have to, but generally the first child is the family hero or the super kid, and that's the little mother and the little man of the family, and they always do what's right. They overachieve. They're over-responsible. They need everyone's approval, and they're not much fun. They just vary like a little old man and a little old lady already as a child. But they provide the self-worth to the family because they're someone to be proud of. As an adult, that person usually becomes a workaholic. They're the type of person that is never wrong. They may marry a dependent person who just says, yes, dear, because they have a need to control and manipulate. And sometimes they have compulsive behaviors themselves, usually workaholism. They can't say no and they can't fail. So they put a lot of pressure on themselves. And usually, for the first at least 20, 25 years, they're very successful because large corporations like to hire them because they are just, they work 16 hours a day. And so they need to learn as an adult to accept failure, to be able to relax and play. They're not very playful. And they make good executives and to be responsible for themselves mostly instead of trying to take on the world, because they've really helped a parent handle the whole family while the other parent was having their own dysfunction. Now, this goes not just for alcoholism, but if somebody's a gambler or shopaholic or sickly, so then the hero child would be trying to help that parent as much as possible. And then they have to learn how to be assertive, that it's okay to say no. There's a lot of people-pleasing that comes about in these roles because everybody's trying to make everybody happy in these houses so that there's not a lot of arguing and yelling, which usually is the case. A lot of anger and screaming and somebody saying, no, you have to do it this way, and people's needs just aren't being taken into account. Now, the second child would be called the scapegoat or the problem child. They have a lot of hostility and they're defiant, withdrawn, and sullen. And they get negative attention. Now, maybe they have a learning disability, maybe they're sickly, but there's usually something that's wrong. And most of the time it's that they're a discipline problem and probably are pretty oppositional, which means they just try to oppose whatever the rules happen to be. The good thing about this scapegoat kid is he is seen or she is seen as a troublemaker. So they're the ones that bring the family into treatment. And they tell you what's going on because they're dying to tell somebody what's going on. And they're wonderful, really. I always tell them, the whole family has a problem here, not just you, but we're going to use you to get to everybody else. And so they feel important for maybe the first time. There's a lot of hurt and feeling of abandonment in that child. There's hurt in everybody. the hero's inadequate, feels inadequate, and tries to make up by doing so much. And the scapegoat, I think sometimes it's like number two child looks at number one and says, well, I'm not going to be that perfect, so I'm going to go the opposite way, and I don't care how much I fail. But they feel very inadequate, and they have very low self-esteem. But they take the focus off of what's going on in the family, whatever addiction is happening or mental illness or whatever is in the family. And it's everybody. Sometimes they kind of blame this kid no matter what happens. And so then the child is really angry because they get blamed no matter what they do. As an adult, they can become alcoholic or addicted and maybe get pregnant early or maybe be in prison or trouble with the authorities. But in recovery, they have a lot of courage, and they're very good under pressure, and they can see reality that other people sometimes can't see, and they're not any trouble then, and they make good counselors and helpers in the world. The third child is called the lost child, or the quiet one, and they are more introverted, loner, maybe daydream a lot. Their rewards are food and they kind of drift and float through life and just follow the other kids because they have a hard time making decisions and knowing what they want. And they really long for a group to belong to. And they have a hard time if the family does break up or as the other kids get older and leave, then this child's kind of lost. They feel unimportant and they don't know what they're feeling at all, very lonely, and they have a lot of fear. And to the family, though, they give the parents at least some relief because the kid's always in their room reading or not bothering anybody, and they don't worry about them. Very indecisive as adults, don't have a lot of zest, not a lot of fun either, and they stay alone, and sometimes they're promiscuous, so sexual addiction. Sometimes they die early, and they also can't say no. They have to have help with assertiveness. But if you do help them, they become very talented and creative because they spend a lot of time daydreaming, and they're very imaginative and very resourceful when they find out exactly what was going on in this house. And then there's the mascot or the family clown. That's usually number four, and they're the baby, super cute, immature, anything for a laugh or attention, seem very fragile sometimes and need protection from the other kids. Hyperactive, short attention span, learning disabilities, and very anxious. And they just make a joke out of everything. They have low self-esteem. They feel inadequate and unimportant also, and also are very lonely. The lost child and the mascot are the two roles in the family that could have mental illness in adulthood. They're more prone to that because they have no idea what they're feeling, and one just doesn't know anything what they're feeling. They kind of stay by themselves, and isolation is very safe to them because nobody's going to bother them, and they don't have to perform. The mascot just covers feelings with jokes, so they don't know what they're feeling either, and so many times you find them on the psychiatrist's couch. But they provide for the family comic relief, fun and humor, and everybody likes to have them around at a party. They're very compulsive, clowning, can't handle stress, and they usually marry a hero, and they're sometimes on the verge of hysterics. If you help them, though, they become very charming. The good host, like to have people around, good company, and they have get a quick wit with their humor and have a good sense of humor and can be very independent and helpful. Now, and then in some families, there's also a placator child, and that's the child that just tries to help and help and help. So they just try to take care of everybody and usually have no idea what they're feeling because if they can't help you, they don't know what to do. And after a while, they start to be very resentful because if you do and do for all these other people, the assumption is, well, someday they're going to turn around and do for me and I'm going to get what I want. Even though many times I don't know what I want. But guess what? If you're just there helping everybody, very seldom does somebody turn around and say, well, do you need anything? Because you don't seem like you need anything because your whole job in the family has been to placate. So those are the roles, and usually we take on at least two of those roles. And if it's an only child, they will have played, you know, most of these roles at some point. And sometimes, too, you have like two older kids and then maybe two younger kids. So when the older kids go off, the younger kids could kind of change their role because of the family need. And I think that this thing should be on Oprah because so many people, I was on a television station up in North Jersey once, and people called in and said, my God, that's it. That's the way we are. And it's really wonderful when you can tell people about their roles and what they're doing and how that is a dysfunction in their adult life. I just had a couple here last night, and They were phenomenal. He's the jokester, and the kids follow him, and they think everything's funny, and then mom doesn't get the respect she needs and feels like she doesn't have a partner because he's like one of the kids. So just both of them, him seeing that he is the mascot and her seeing that she's the hero and overly responsible and not a lot of fun, they just went out. I said, we don't need to talk about any individual problems. I just want to talk about these roles tonight and how the roles cause the problem a lot of times. And so they went out happy and with some homework. Okay, now the characteristics coming from an alcoholic or dysfunctional home. And just let me say that an alcoholic is just alcoholic home is just one type of a dysfunctional home. In the early 80s, when this list came out about there's 13 characteristics coming from an alcoholic home, for a couple of years, us in the field, we were working with people, and then people would come in and say, you know, I have those characteristics, but I didn't come from an alcoholic home. And then the term dysfunctional home came about. So it was just any home where your emotional needs aren't met. That's how this goes. Let's see. You have difficulty following a project through from beginning to end. So you start a lot of things. You lie sometimes when it would be just as easy to tell the truth. You judge yourself harshly. You have difficulty having fun. Take yourself very seriously. Have difficulty with intimate relationships. Overreact to changes over which you have no control. Seek approval and affirmation. Usually feel that you're different from other people. Sometimes you're super responsible or super irresponsible. You can be both. I am also, I see that people are extremely loyal, even in the face of evidence that the loyalty is undeserved. And then many people are impulsive. They tend to lock themselves into a course of action without giving serious consideration to alternative behaviors or possible consequences. And being impulsive leads to a lot of confusion and spending an excessive amount of energy cleaning up a mess that you shouldn't have gotten into in the first place. And you can read more about the roles and the characteristics in Chapter 2 of my book. And then the last characteristic is that you guess what normal behavior is. So many times that's why you feel like you have no self-worth, because you really don't know what's normal and how am I supposed to behave at work or at this situation or socially. A lot of people do not have the social skills coming from these emotional homes because the families tended to isolate. And so they didn't go out and socialize like a normal family does. Long-winded answer.
No, yeah, well, I'm sure. Yeah, it's a loaded question for sure. Let's look at the stages of recovery an adult usually makes to mature coming from an alcoholic or dysfunctional family.
Okay, well, yes, and it's important to know that you don't spend all of your life recovering. So that you come out of these families with some survival skills, and they're not all negative. And you may watch Oprah now. I mean, in 1980, people really had to do it by word of mouth, but now there's so much self-help on television so you watch a show and you say, you know, I have some of those characteristics, or you read an article or a book and realize you did come from some kind of a dysfunctional home, and you've assumed a particular role. And then, aha, that's why I am the way I am, or that's why we are the way we are. And so that's just one stage. You survive. And then as you get probably more into adulthood, maybe around, you know, 29, 32 years of age, it's like, well, the survival skills have worked for a while, but they're not working the way you want them to work. And many times you're feeling like, oh, I sound like my mother, or I sound like my father. And that's a big motivator for people coming from dysfunction. They don't want to be like their parents. So then you read more about it, go to a therapist maybe, or just get more education, and then that's called the emerging awareness stage. And this is why I am the way I am. And then with that stage comes a lot of new energy that allows you to identify some of your behaviors and gives you new strength to learn more about yourself. Maybe you might seek therapy or join a 12-step self-help group. In order to learn more about your core issues. Now, there's five central issues that come from being an adult child of anything. And the first is the issue of control. This is just huge, and it permeates other issues such as distrust. We have a hard time trusting people because you couldn't trust the parents or parent that was supposed to be in charge of you. You ignore your own feelings. You're not sure what you are feeling. and you ignore your own needs because the good of the whole is more important. Because in crisis, when this family was in crisis, everybody worked together to get dad to work or to get mom up or whatever they had to do. So that's one of the reasons, too, when you come from dysfunction, you make a good worker, like at an emergency room or a nurse or a therapist, because you've been helping your whole life. You're kind of trained. So not trusting your own feelings or perceptions, and which then doesn't help with your decision-making skills because you have a hard time making decisions and knowing what direction you want to go into. Feeling overly responsible for parents and others in the world. And then last but not least is having difficulty with intimate relationships. So that's the core issue stage. And after you start getting some help, you start integrating some new behaviors with this knowledge that you have. And then that is the integration stage, and you really are behaving differently. And eventually the whole point is to think and do at the same time so that you really know what your feelings are and you're coming from your real self. There's a last stage called the Genesis stage, which is a very spiritual stage. And some people get to that stage and some people do not. That's just a value judgment there.
Today we are with Dr. Karen Herrick, who has shared clinical expertise for 24 years in her private practice and by lecturing throughout the United States on dysfunctional and addictive homes here on eHealth Radio's Family Health Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Karen, what are the basic problems that you face out in the world when you come from an alcoholic or dysfunctional family?
Yeah, I think the two most basic ones are anger and being impatient, because people who are hurt have stuffed their anger away. They find themselves frustrated and angry in life when things, just some simple little thing, like somebody shuts the door in your face or something, you get absolutely rageful about that. Many have physical problems as a result of feelings that they've bottled up, so they need some help with the body-mind connection, that what you are suffering emotionally does eventually, after years and years, come out as a physical problem in your body. For example, many people from alcoholic and dysfunctional homes suffer from bronchitis or sinus conditions, which the cause is living in an inflamed family environment, and you've stuffed everything. And then you become kind of a sniffer the rest of your life if you don't handle it. Sometimes people have anger that is sneaky or passive-aggressive, which reminds one of an adolescent who doesn't have the words to explain things to you. So they have kind of an attitude towards others that is negative, and they spend a lot of time in life resisting what it is you want from them to do. So they become oppositional. And some people look forward to getting angry because it intimidates people, and then they're left alone, which is exactly what they want. They want to be isolated because that's when they're safe. And many times they retreat to the safety of their house or their bed. There's an old cartoon that showed a person under the covers in bed, and it was entitled An Adult Child Solving a Problem, because they love to sleep and hide and avoid life. Those are the anger and impatience and acting kind of immature are the basic problems that people have.
How long does it typically take to recover from living in such a home, and what does recovery look like?
Well, okay, recovery usually takes about 10% of a person's age, and that's going to therapy, reading books, finding others who are in recovery to make friends with so that you have new friends with similar values. And to learn a balance in your life, I think that's what recovery looks like, by knowing what you need. And that life is pretty much divided in a pattern of needing intimacy, so it's important that you do have an intimate relationship. You need friends, and friends that you have chosen, not just people that show up and you just take them. You need a working relationship of some kind with your family of origin. Some people choose, to just cut off emotionally. That's the way they usually behave, rather than trying to work something out so that you do have some of the good from your family. And then to have work or school as part of your life, so knowing that you have a passion for something. Social interests, you need those, and you need some alone time. And you need to put fun and play in your life and some kind of spirituality. If that is religion for you, well, that's wonderful. If it's not, they say 40% of the population now are spiritual, and that means they believe in God, maybe the Bible and the Golden Rule, and then they just, do their own thing. So that's what life would look like to be more balanced.
Dr. Karen, where can our listeners find more information or to be in contact with you online?
Well, they can buy my book from Amazon or Author House, and it is on Kindle. The book is called You're Not Finished Yet. And they can also go on my website, which is www.karenherrick, and that's karenherrick.com, all lowercase.
Very good. We've been talking with Dr. Karen Herrick, who has shared clinical expertise for 24 years in her private practice and by lecturing throughout the United States on dysfunctional and addictive homes. And the website of reference, once again, is karenherrick.com. Karen, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today on eHealth Radio.
Oh, you're entirely welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Family Health Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. We do thank you for listening, and until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.